pass every forest and every meadow. And we didn't manage that without the invaluable help of witches. But those times have gone, Geralt, irrevocably gone. The Baron won't allow a Forktail to be killed because it's the last draconid for 1,000 miles and no longer gives rise to fear, but rather to compassion and nostalgia for times past. The troll under the bridge gets on with people. He's not a monster used to frighten children. He's a relic and a local attraction, and a useful one at that. And chimeri, manticores and amphisbenas? They dwell in virgin forests and inaccessible mountains. So, I was right. Something is coming to an end. Whether you like it or not, something's coming to an end. I don't like you mouthing banal platitudes. I don't like your expression when you do it. What's happening to you? I don't recognise you, Geralt. Oh, plague on it. Let's go south as soon as possible to those wild countries. As soon as you've cut down a couple of monsters, your blues will disappear. And there's supposed to be a fair number of monsters down there. They say when an old woman's tired of life, she goes alone and weaponless into the woods to collect brushwood. The consequences are guaranteed. You should go and settle there for good.
Maybe I should. But I won't.
Why? It's easier for a witcher to make money there.
Easier to make money?
Geralt took a sip from the demijohn.
But harder to spend it. And on top of that, they eat pearl barley and millet. The beer tastes like piss, the girls don't wash, and the mosquitoes bite.
Dandelion chuckled loudly and rested his head against the bookshelf on the leather-bound volumes.
Millet and mosquitoes! That reminds me of our first expedition together to the edge of the world, he said. Do you remember? We met at the Fete in Gullet, and you persuaded me. You had to flee from Gullet as fast as your horse could carry you, because the girl you'd knocked up onto the musician's podium had 4 sturdy brothers. They were looking for you all over town, threatening to geld you and cover you in pitch and sawdust. That's why you hung on to me then.
And you almost jumped out of your pants with joy to have a companion. Until then, you only had your horse for company.
But you're right. It was as you say. I did have to disappear for a while, and the Valley of Flowers seemed just right for my purpose. It was, after all, supposed to be the edge of the inhabited world, the last outpost of civilization, the furthest point on the border of 2 worlds. Remember?
I remember.
The Edge of the World, Part 1. Dandelion came down the steps of the inn carefully, carrying 2 tankards dripping with froth. Cursing under his breath, he squeezed through a group of curious children and crossed the yard at a diagonal, avoiding the cowpats. A number of villagers had already gathered round the table in the courtyard, where the witcher was talking to the alderman. The poet set the tankards down and found a seat. He realised straight away that the conversation hadn't advanced a jot during his short absence.
"I'm a witcher, sir," Geralt repeated for the umpteenth time, wiping beer froth from his lips. "I don't sell anything, I don't go around enlisting men for the army, and I don't know how to treat glanders. I'm a witcher."
"It's a profession," explained Dandelion yet again. "A witcher? Do you understand? He kills striggers and spectres, he exterminates all sorts of vermin, professionally, for money. Do you get it, Alderman?"
"Aha."
The Alderman's brow, deeply furrowed in thought, grew smoother.
"A witcher! You should have said so right away."
"Exactly," agreed Geralt. "So now I'll ask you, is there any work to be found around here for me?"
"Ah."
The alderman quite visibly started to think again.
"Work? Maybe those, were things. You're asking, are there any were things hereabouts?"
The witcher smiled and nodded, rubbing an itching eyelid with his knuckles.
"That there are," the alderman concluded, after a fair while. "Only look ye yonder. See ye those mountains? There's elves live there. That there is their kingdom. Their palaces, hear ye, are all of pure gold. Ooh, aye, sir. Elves, I tell ye. 'Tis awful. He who yonder goes never returns.
I thought so, said Geralt coldly, which is precisely why I don't intend going there.
Dandelion chuckled impudently. The alderman pondered a long while, just as Geralt had expected.
Aha, he said at last. Well, aye, but there be other weir things here too. From the land of elves they come, to be sure. Oh, sir, there be many, many. 'Tis hard to count them all. But the worst, that be the bane. Am I right, my good men?
The good men came to life and besieged the table from all sides.
Bane, said one. Aye, aye, 'tis true what the alderman says. A pale virgin. She walks the cottages at daybreak, and the children, they die.
And imps, added another, a soldier from the watchtower. They tangle up the horses' manes in the stables.
And bats! There'll be bats here! And myriapodons! You come up all in spots because of them!
The next few minutes passed in a recital of the monsters which plagued the local peasants with their dishonourable doings or their simple existence. Geralt and Dandelion learnt of misguides and mammoons, which prevent an honest peasant from finding his way home in a drunken stupor, of the flying drake which drinks milk from cows, of the head on spiders' legs which runs around in the forest, of hobolds which wear red hats, and about a dangerous pike which tears linen from women's hands as they wash it. And just you wait, and it'll be at the women themselves. They weren't spared hearing that old Nan the hag flies on a broom at night and performs abortions in the day, that the miller tampers with the flour by mixing it with powdered acorns, and that a certain Duda believed the royal steward to be a thief and scoundrel. Geralt listened to all this calmly, nodding with feigned interest, and asked a few questions about the roads and layout of the land, after which he rose and nodded to Dandelion.
"Well, take care, my good people," he said. "I'll be back soon, then we'll see what can be done."
They rode away in silence alongside the cottages and fences, accompanied by yapping dogs and screaming children. "Geralt," said Dandelion, standing in the stirrups to pick a fine apple from a branch which stretched over the orchard fence.
"All the way you've been complaining about it being harder and harder to find work. Yet from what I just heard, it looks as if you could work here without break until winter. You'd make a penny or two, and I'd have some beautiful subjects for my ballads. So, explain why we're riding on."
"I wouldn't make a penny, Dandelion."
"Why?"
"Because there wasn't a word of truth in what they said."
"I beg your pardon?"
"None of the creatures they mentioned exist."
"You're joking!"
Dandelion spat out a pip and threw the apple core at a patched mongrel.
"No, it's impossible. I was watching them carefully, and I know people. They weren't lying."
"No," the Witcher agreed. "They weren't lying. They firmly believed it all, which doesn't change the facts."
The poet was silent for a while.
"None of those monsters." "None? That can't be. Something of what they listed must be here. At least one. Admit it."
"All right, I admit it. One does exist for sure."
"Ha! What?"
"A bat."
They rode out beyond the last fences, onto a highway between beds yellow with oilseed and cornfields rolling in the wind. Loaded carts travelled past them in the opposite direction. The bard pulled his leg over the saddle bow, rested his lute on his knee, and strummed nostalgic tunes, waving from time to time at the giggling, scantily clad girls wandering along the sides of the road, carrying rakes on their robust shoulders.
"Geralt," he said suddenly, "but monsters do exist. Maybe not as many as before, maybe they don't lurk behind every tree in the forest, but they are there. They exist. So how do you account for people inventing ones, then? What's more, believing in what they invent, eh, famous Witcher? Haven't you wondered why?"
"I have, famous poet, and I know why."
"I'm curious."
"People," Geralt turned his head, "like to invent monsters and monstrosities. Then they seem less monstrous themselves. When they get blind drunk, cheat, steal, beat their wives, starve an old woman. When they kill a trapped fox with an axe or riddle the last existing unicorn with arrows. They like to think that the bane, entering cottages at daybreak, is more monstrous than they are. They feel better then. They find it easier to live."
I'll remember that, said Dandelion after a moment's silence. I'll find some rhymes and compose a ballad about it.
Do, but don't expect a great applause.
They rode slowly, but lost the last cottages of the hamlet from sight. Soon they had climbed the row of forested hills.
Ha!
Dandelion halted his horse and looked around.
Look, Geralt! Isn't it beautiful here? Idyllic, damn it! A feast for the eyes!
The land sloped gently down to a mosaic of flat, even fields, picked out in variously coloured crops. In the middle, round and regular like a leaf of clover, sparkled the deep waters of three lakes, surrounded by dark strips of alder thickets. The horizon was traced by a misty blue line of mountains rising above the black, shapeless stretch of forest.
We're riding on, Dandelion.
The road led straight towards the lakes alongside dikes and ponds hidden by alder trees and filled with quacking mallards, garganies, herons and grebes. The richness of bird life was surprising alongside the signs of human activity. The dikes were well maintained and covered with fascines, while the sluice gates had been reinforced with stones and beams. The outlet boxes, which were not in the least rotten, trickled merrily with water. Canoes and jetties were visible in the reeds by the lakes, and bars of set nets and fish pots were poking out of the deep waters. Dandelion suddenly looked around.
Someone's following us, he said excited. In a cart!
Incredible, scoffed the Witcher, without looking around. In a cart, and I thought that the locals rode on bats.
Do you know what? Growled the troubadour. The closer we get to the edge of the world, the sharper your wit. I dread to think what it will come to.
They weren't riding fast, and the empty cart, drawn by two piebald horses, quickly caught up with them.
Whoa!
The driver brought the horses to a halt just behind them. He was wearing a sheepskin over his bare skin, and his hair reached down to his brows.
The gods be praised, noble sirs!
We too, replied Dandelion, familiar with the custom, praise them. If we want to, murmured the Witcher.
I call myself Netley, announced the carter. I was watching ye speak to the alderman at Upper Posada. I know ye to be a witcher.
Geralt let go of the reins and let his mare snort at the roadside nettles.
I did hear, Netley continued, the alderman prattle ye stories. I marked your expression, and 'twas nae strange to me. In a long time now I'd nae heard such balderdashing lies.
Dandelion laughed. Geralt was looking at the peasant attentively, silently. Netley cleared his throat.
"Care ye nae to be hired for real proper work, sir?" he asked. "There be something I have for ye."
"And what is that?"
Netley didn't lower his eyes.
"It be nae good to speak of business on the road. Let us drive on to my home, to Lower Posada. There we'll speak. Anyways, 'tis that way ye be heading."
"Why are ye so sure?"
"That's 'cause ye have nae other way here, and your horses' noses be turned in that direction, not their butts."
Dandelion laughed again.
What do you say to that, Geralt?
Nothing, said the Witcher. It's no good to talk on the road.
On our way, then, Honourable Netley.
Tie ye the horses to the frame and sit yourselves down in the cart, the peasant proposed. It'd be more comfortable for ye. Why, rut your arses on the saddle.
Too true. They climbed onto the cart. The Witcher stretched out comfortably on the straw. Dandelion, evidently afraid of getting his elegant green jerkin dirty, sat on the plank. Netley clucked his tongue at the horses, and the vehicle clattered along the beam-reinforced dike. They crossed a bridge over a canal overgrown with water lilies and duckweed, and passed a strip of cut meadows. Cultivated fields stretched as far as the eye could see.
"It's hard to believe that this should be the edge of the world, the edge of civilization," said Dandelion. "Just look, Geralt! Rye like gold, and a mounted peasant could hide in that corn, and all that oilseed. Look, how enormous!"
"You know about agriculture."
"We poets have to know about everything," said Dandelion haughtily. "Otherwise we'd compromise our work. One has to learn, my dear fellow, learn. The fate of the world depends on agriculture, so it's good to know about it. Agriculture feeds, clothes, protects from the cold, provides entertainment and supports art.
You've exaggerated a bit with the entertainment and art.
And booze? What's that made of?
I get it.
Not very much, you don't. Learn. Look at those purple flowers. They're lupins.
These be vetch, to be true, interrupted Nettley.
Have ye nae seen lupins, or what?
But you've hit exact with one thing, sir. Everything seeds mightily here, and grows us to make the heart sing. That be why 'tis called the Valley of Flowers. That be why our forefathers settled here, first ridding the land of the elves.
The Valley of Flowers? That's Dol Blathanna.
Dandelion nudged the witcher, who was stretched out on the straw, with his elbow.
You paying attention?
The elves have gone, but their name remains. Lack of imagination.
And how do you get on with the elves here, dear host? You've got them in the mountains across the path, after all.
We nay mix with each other, each to his own.
The best solution, said the poet. Isn't that right, Geralt?
The witcher didn't reply. Part 2.
Thank you for the spread.
Geralt licked the bone spoon clean and dropped it into the empty bowl.
100 thanks, dear host. And now, if you permit, we'll get down to business.
Well, that we can, agreed Nettley. What say ye, Dunn?
Dunn, the elder of Lower Posada, a huge man with a gloomy expression, nodded to the girls, who swiftly removed the dishes from the table and left the room, to the obvious regret of Dandelion, who had been grinning at them ever since the feast began and making them giggle at his gross jokes.
I'm listening, said Geralt,
looking at the window from where the rapping of an axe and the sound of a saw drifted. Some sort of woodwork was going on in the yard, and the sharp, resinous smell was penetrating the room.
Tell me how I can be of use to you.
Nettley glanced at Dunn. The elder of the village nodded and cleared his throat.
Well, it be like this, he said. There be this field hereabouts.
Geralt kicked Dandelion, who was preparing to make a spiteful comment, under the table.
A field, continued Dunn. Be I right, Nettley? A long time, that field there, it lay fallow. But we set it to the plough, and now, 'tis on it we sow hemp, hops, and flax. It'd be a grand piece of field, I tell ye. Stretches right up to the forest.
And what?
The poet couldn't help himself.
What's on that field there?
Well.
Dunn raised his head and scratched himself behind the ear.
Well. There'd be a devil prowls there.
What?
Snorted Dandelion.
A what?
I tell ye, a devil.
What devil?
What can he be? A devil, and that be it.
Devils don't exist.
Don't interrupt, Dandelion, said Geralt in a calm voice.
And go on, Honourable Dunn. I tell ye, it's a devil. I heard ye.
Geralt could be incredibly patient when he chose.
Tell me, what does he look like? Where did he come from? How does he bother you?
One thing at a time, if you please.
Well.
Dunn raised his gnarled hand and started to count with great difficulty, folding his fingers over, one at a time.
One thing at a time. Forsooth, ye be a wise man. Well. It be like this. He looks, sir, like a devil, for all the world like a devil. Where did he come from? Well, nowhere. Crash, bang, wallop, and there we have him. A devil. And bother us? Forsooth, he doesn't bother us overly. There be times he even helps.
Helps?
Cackled Dandelion, trying to remove a fly from his beard.
A devil?
Don't interrupt, Dandelion.
Carry on, Dunn, sir.
How does he help you, this, as you say, devil?
Repeated the freeman with emphasis.
Well, this be how he helps. He fertilizes the land. He turns the soil. He gets rid of the moles, scares birds away, watches over the turnips and beetroots. Oh, and he eats the caterpillars, he does. They as do hatch in the cabbages.
But the cabbages, he eats them too, forsooth. Nothing but guzzle be what he does, just like a diovel.
Dandelion cackled again, then flicked a beer-drenched fly at a cat sleeping by the hearth. The cat opened one eye and glanced at the bard reproachfully.
Nevertheless, the witcher said calmly, you're ready to pay me to get rid of him, am I right?
In other words, you don't want him in the vicinity.
And who? Dun looked at him gloomily. Would care to have a diovel on his birthright soil? This be our land since forever, bestowed upon us by the king, and it has naught to do with the diovel. We spit on his help. We've got hands ourselves, have we not? And he, sir, is nay a diovel but a malicious beast, and has got so much, forgive the word, shite in his head as to be hard to bear. There be no knowing what will come into his head. Once he fouled the well, then chased a lass, frightening and threatening to fuck her. He steals, sir, our belongings and victuals. He destroys and breaks things, makes a nuisance of himself, churns the dikes, digs ditches like some muskrat or beaver. The water from one pond trickled out completely, and the carp in it died. He smoked a pipe in the haystack he did, the son of a whore, and all the hay it went up in smoke.
I see, interrupted Geralt.
So he does bother you?
Nay.
Dun shook his head.
He doesn't bother us. He be simply up to mischief, that's what he be.
Dandelion turned to the window, muffling his laughter. The witcher kept silent.
Oh, what be there to talk about? Said Nettle,
who had been silent until then.
Ye be a witcher, nay? So do ye something about this diovel. It be work ye be looking for in Upper Posada. I heard so myself. So ye have work. We'll pay ye what needs be, but take note. We don't want ye killing the diovel, no way.
The witcher raised his head and smiled nastily.
Interesting, he said. Unusual, I'd say.
What? Frowned Dun. An unusual condition.
Why all this mercy?
He should nay be killed.
Dun frowned even more.
Because in this valley, he should nay be, and that be it,
interrupted Nettle.
Only catch him, sir, or drive him off yon over the seventh mountain, and you will nay be hard done by when you be paid.
The witcher stayed silent, still smiling.
Seal it, will ye? The deal? Asked Dun.
First, I'd like a look at him, this devil of yours.
The freemen glanced at each other.
It be your right, said Nettle, then stood up. And your will. The diovel, he do prowl the whole neighbourhood at night, but at day he dwells somewhere in the hemp, or among the old willows in the marshland. Ye can take a look at him there. We won't hasten ye. Ye be wanting rest, then rest as long as ye will. Ye will nae go wanting in comfort and food, as befits the custom of hospitality. Take care.
Geralt! Dandelion jolted up from his stool and looked out into the yard at the freeman walking away from the cottage.
I can't understand anything any more. A day hasn't gone by since our chat about imagined monsters, and you suddenly get yourself hired hunting devils. And everybody, except ignorant freemen, obviously, knows that devils are an invention. They're mythical creatures. What's this unexpected zeal of yours supposed to mean?
Knowing you a little, as I do, I take it you haven't abased yourself so as to get us bed, board and lodging, have you?
Indeed, grimaced Geralt. It does look as if you know me a little, singer.
In that case, I don't understand.
What is there to understand?
There's no such things as devils, yelled the poet,
shaking the cat from sleep once and for all.
No such thing! To the devil with it! Devils don't exist!
True.
Geralt smiled.
But Dandelion, I could never resist the temptation of having a look at something that doesn't exist.
Part 3.
One thing is certain, muttered the witcher,
sweeping his eyes over the tangled jungle of hemp spreading before them.
This devil is not stupid.
How did you deduce that?
Dandelion was curious. From the fact that he's sitting in an impenetrable thicket? Any old hare has enough brains for that.
It's a question of the special qualities of hemp,
A field of this size emits a strong aura against magic. Most spells will be useless here. And there, look, do you see those poles? Those are hops. Their pollen has the same effect. It's not mere chance. The rascal senses the aura and knows he's safe here. Dandelion coughed and adjusted his breeches. I'm curious. He scratched his forehead beneath his hat. How are you going to go about it, Geralt? I've never seen you work. I take it you know a thing or two about catching devils. I'm trying to recall some ballads. There was one about a devil and a woman. Rude, but amusing. The woman, you see. Spare me, Dandelion. As you wish. I only wanted to be helpful, that's all. And you shouldn't scorn ancient songs. There's wisdom in them, accumulated over generations. There's a ballad about a farmhand called Slow who... Stop wittering. We have to earn our board and lodging. What do you want to do? Rummage around a bit in the hemp. That's original, snorted the troubadour, though not too refined. And you, how would you go about it? Intelligently, Dandelion sniffed. Craftily, with a hounding, for example. I'd chase the devil out of the thicket, chase him on horseback in the open field, and lasso him. What do you think of that?
Interesting. Who knows? Maybe it could be done, if you took part, because at least two of us are needed for an enterprise like that. But we're not going hunting yet. I want to find out what this thing is, this devil. That's why I'm going to rummage about in the hemp.
Hey! The bard had only just noticed. You haven't brought your sword.
What for? I know some ballads about devils too. Neither the woman nor Slow the farmhand used a sword.
Dandelion looked around. Do we have to squeeze through the very middle of this thicket?
You don't have to. You can go back to the village and wait for me.
Oh, no, protested the poet. And miss a chance like this? I want to see a devil too, see if he's as terrible as they claim. I was asking if we have to force our way through the hemp when there's a path.
Quite right. Geralt shaded his eyes with his hand. There is a path, so let's use it.
And what if it's the devil's path?
All the better. We won't have to walk too far.
Do you know, Geralt, babbled the bard, following the Witcher along the narrow, uneven path among the hemp. I always thought the devil was just a metaphor invented for cursing. Go to the devil, to the devil with it, may the devil. Lowlanders say, the devils are bringing us guests, while dwarves have devil hurl when they get something wrong, and call poor-blooded livestock devilscheiss. And in the old language, there's a saying, a diable pers, which means I know what it means. You're babbling, Dandelion. Dandelion stopped talking, took off the hat decorated with a heron's feather, fanned himself with it, and wiped his sweaty brow. The humid, stifling heat, intensified by the smell of grass and weeds in blossom, dominated the thicket. The path curved a little, and, just beyond the bend, ended in a small clearing which had been stamped in the weeds.
Look, Dandelion.
In the very centre of the clearing lay a large flat stone, and on it stood several clay bowls. An almost burnt-out tallow candle was set among the bowls. Geralt saw some grains of corn and broad beans among the unrecognisable pips and seeds stuck in the flakes of melted fat.
As I suspected, he muttered. They're bringing him offerings.
That's just it, said the poet, indicating the candle. And they burn a tallow candle for the devil. But they're feeding him seeds, I see, as if he were a finch. Plague! What a bloody pigsty! Everything here is all sticky with honey and birch tar. What? The bard's next words were drowned by a loud, sinister bleating. Something rustled and stamped in the hemp. Then the strangest creature Geralt had ever seen emerged from the thicket. The creature was about half a rod tall, with bulging eyes and a goat's horns and beard. The mouth, a soft, busy slit, also brought a chewing goat to mind. Its nether regions were covered with long, thick, dark red hair right down to the cleft hooves. The devil had a long tail ending in a brush-like tassel, which wagged energetically.
Ick, ick,
barked the monster, stamping his hooves.
What do you want here? Leave, leave, or I'll ram you down. Ick, ick.
Has anyone ever kicked your arse, little goat? Dandelion couldn't stop himself.
Ick, ick, me,
bleated the goat horn in agreement or denial, or simply bleating for the sake of it.
Shut up, Dandelion, growled the Witcher. Not a word.
Blah, 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 blah.
The creature gurgled furiously, his lips parting wide to expose yellow horse-like teeth.
Blah, 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 blah.
Most certainly, nodded Dandelion. You can take the barrel organ and bell when you go home.
Stop it, damn you, hissed Geralt. Keep your stupid jokes to yourself.
Jokes?
Roared the goat horn loudly and leapt up.
Jokes? New jokers have come, have they? They brought iron balls, have they? I'll give you iron balls, you scoundrels, you... You want a joke, do you? Here are some jokes for you. Here are your balls.
The creature sprang up and gave a sudden swipe with his hand. Dandelion howled and sat down on the path, clasping his forehead. The creature bleated and aimed again. Something whizzed past Geralt's ear.
Here are your balls!
An iron ball, an inch in diameter, thwacked the Witcher in the shoulder, and the next hit Dandelion in the knee. The poet cursed foully and scrambled away, Geralt running after him as balls whizzed above his head.
Heck, heck!
Screamed the goat horn, leaping up and down.
I'll give you balls, you shitty jokers!
Another ball whizzed through the air. Dandelion cursed even more foully as he grabbed the back of his head. Geralt threw himself to one side among the hemp, but didn't avoid the ball that hit him in the shoulder. The goat horn's aim was true, and he appeared to have an endless supply of balls. The Witcher, stumbling through the thicket, heard yet another triumphant bleat from the victorious goat horn, followed by the whistle of a flying ball, a curse, and the patter of Dandelion's feet scurrying away along the path. And then silence fell. Part 4.
Well, well, Geralt.
Dandelion held a horseshoe he'd cooled in a bucket to his forehead.
That's not what I expected. A horned freak with a goatee, like a shaggy billy goat, and he chased you away like some upstart. And I got it in the head. Look at that bump.
That's the sixth time you've shown it to me, and it's no more interesting now than it was the first time.
How charming. And I thought I'd be safe with you.
I didn't ask you to traipse after me in the hemp, and I did ask you to keep that foul tongue of yours quiet. You didn't listen, so now you can suffer. In silence, please, because they're just coming.
Netley and Dun walked into the day room. Behind them hobbled a grey-haired old woman, twisted as a pretzel, led by a fair-haired and painfully thin teenage girl.
Honourable Dun, Honourable Netley, the Witcher began without introduction. I asked you before I left whether you yourselves had already tried to do something with that devil of yours. You told me you hadn't done anything. I've grounds to think otherwise. I await your explanation.
The villagers murmured amongst themselves, after which Dun coughed into his fist and took a step forward.
Ye be right, sir. Asking forgiveness. We lied. It be guilt devours us. We wanted to outwit the devil ourselves, for him to go away. By what means? Here, in this valley, said Dun slowly, there be monsters in the past. Flying dragons, earth myriapotens, were-brawls, ghosts, gigantous spiders and various vipers. And all the times we be searching in our great book for a way to deal with all that vermin.
What great book?
Show the book, old woman. Book, I say. The great book. I'll be on the boil in a minute. Deaf as a doorknob she be. Lither, tell the old woman to show the book.
The girl tore the huge book from the taloned fingers of the old woman and handed it to the Witcher.
In this here great book, continued Dun, which be in our family clan for time immemorial, be ways to deal with every monster, spell and wonder in the world that has been, is, or will be.
Geralt turned the heavy, thick, greasy, dust-encrusted volume in his hands. The girl was still standing in front of him, wringing her apron in her hands. She was older than he had initially thought. Her delicate figure had deceived him, so different from the robust build of the other girls in the village. He lay the book down on the table and turned its heavy wooden cover.
Take a look at this, Dandelion.
The
first runes, the bard worked out, peering over his shoulder, the horseshoe still pressed to his forehead. The writing used before the modern alphabet, still based on elfin runes and dwarves' ideograms. A funny sentence construction, but that's how they spoke then. Interesting etchings and illuminations. It's not often you get to see something like this, Geralt, and if you do, it's in libraries belonging to temples and not villages at the edge of the world. By all the gods, where did you get that from, dear peasants? Surely you're not going to try to convince me that you can read this. Woman, can you read the first runes? Can you read any runes?
Why?
The fair-haired girl moved closer to the woman and whispered something into her ear.
Read?
The crony revealed her toothless gums in a smile.
Me? No, sweetheart. 'Tis a skill I've never mastered.
Explain to me, said Geralt coldly, turning to Dun and Netley. How do you use the book if you can't read runes? Always the oldest woman knows what stands written in the book, said Dun gloomily. And what she knows, she teaches some young one when 'tis time for her to turn to earth. E.g. yourselves how 'tis time for our old woman. So our old woman has taken Lilla in, and she be teaching her. But for now, 'tis the old woman knows best.
The old witch and the young witch, muttered Dandelion.
The old woman knows the whole book by heart, Geralt asked with disbelief. Is that right, Grandma?
Nay, the whole, oh nay,
answered the woman, again through Lilla.
Only what stands written by the picture.
Ah.
Geralt opened the book at random. The picture on the torn page depicted a dappled pig with horns in the shape of a lyre.
Well then, what's written here?
The old woman smacked her lips, took a careful look at the etching, then shut her eyes.
The horned aurochs are Taurus, she recited. Erroneously called bison by ignoramuses. It hath horns and used them to ram—
Enough. Very good indeed.
The Witcher turned several sticky pages.
And here?
Cloud sprites and wind sprites be varied. Some rain pour, some wind roar, and others hurl their thunder. Harvests, to protect from them, takest thou a knife of iron, new, of a mouse's droppings a half ounce, of a grey heron's fat.
Good. Well done. And here. What's this?
The etching showed a dishevelled monstrosity with enormous eyes and even larger teeth, riding a horse. In its right hand, the monstrous being wielded a substantial sword. In its left, a bag of money.
A witch man, mumbled the woman. Called by some a witcher. To summon him is most dangerous, albeit one must, for when against the monster and the vermin there be no aid, the witch man can contrive. But careful one must be—
Enough, muttered Geralt. Enough, Grandma, thank you.
No, no, protested Dandelion with a malicious smile. How does it go on? What a greatly interesting book. Go on, Granny, go on.
But careful one must be to touch not the witch man, for thus the manes can one acquire. And lasses, do from him hide away, for lustful the witch man is above all measure.
Quite correct, spot on, laughed the poet. And Lilla, so it seemed to Geralt, smiled almost imperceptibly.
Though the witch man greatly covetous and greedy for gold be, mumbled the old woman, half closing her eyes, giveth he not such a one more than, for a drowner, one silver penny or three halves, for a werecat, silver pennies two, for a plumard, silver pennies.
Those were the days, muttered the Witcher.
Thank you, Grandma. And now, show us where it speaks of the devil, and what the book says about devils. This time 'tis grateful I'd be to heareth more, for to learn the ways and means he did use to deal with him most curious am I.
Careful, Geralt, chuckled Dandelion. You're starting to fall into their jargon. It's an infectious mannerism. The woman, controlling her shaking hands with difficulty, turned several pages. The Witcher and the poet leaned over the table. The etching did, in effect, show the ball thrower, horned, hairy, tailed, and smiling maliciously.
"The Diavol," recited the woman, "also called Willower or Sylvan. For livestock and domestic fowl, a tiresome and great pest is he. Be it your will to chase him from your hamlet, takest thou—"
"Well, well," murmured Dandelion.
"Takest thou of nuts one fistful,"
continued the woman, running her finger along the parchment.
"Next, takest thou of iron balls a second fistful, of honey an utricle, of birch tar a second, of grey soup a firkin, of soft cheese another. There, where the Diavol dwelleth, goest thou went his night, commenceth then to eat the nuts. Anon, the Diavol, who hath great greed, will hasten and ask if they are tasty indeed. Givest to him, then, the balls of iron."
"Damn you!" murmured Dandelion. "Poxtick, quiet!" said Geralt. "Well, Grandma, go on."
"Having broken his teeth, he will be attentive as thou eatest the honey. Of said honey will he himself desire. Givest him of birch tar, then yourself eateth soft cheese. Soon, hearest thou, will the Diavol grumbleth and tumbleth, but makest of it as naught. Yet, if the Diavol desireth soft cheese, givest him soup, for soup the Diavol withstandeth not."
"You got to the soap," interrupted Geralt with a stony expression, turning towards Dun and Nettley.
"In no way," groaned Nettley. "If only we had got to the balls, but he gave us what for when he bit a ball.
And who told you to give him so many?" Dandelion was enraged. "It stands written in the book, one fistful to take, yet ye gave us of balls a sackful. Ye furnished him with ammunition for 2 years, the fool ye be."
"Careful," smiled the Witcher. "You're starting to fall into their jargon. It's infectious.
Thank you." Geralt suddenly raised his head and looked into the eyes of the girl standing by the woman. Lilla didn't lower her eyes. They were pale and wildly blue. "Why are you bringing the devil offerings in the form of grain?" he asked sharply. "After all, it's obvious that he's a typical herbivore." Lilla didn't answer.
"I asked you a question, girl. Don't be frightened. You won't get the mange by talking to me."
"Don't ask her anything, sir," said Nettley, with obvious unease in his voice. "Lilla, she be strange. She won't answer you. Don't force her."
Geralt kept looking into Leela's eyes, and Leela still met his gaze. He felt a shiver run down his back and creep along his shoulders.
"Why didn't you attack the devil with stanchions and pitchforks?" He raised his voice. "Why didn't you set a trap for him? If you'd wanted to, his goat's head would already be spiked on a pole to frighten crows away. You warned me not to kill him. Why? You forbade it, didn't you, Leela?"
Dun got up from the bench. His head almost touched the beams.
"Leave, lass," he growled. "Take the old woman and leave."
"Who is she, Honourable Dun?" the Witcher demanded, as the door closed behind Lilla and the woman. "Who is that girl? Why does she enjoy more respect from you than that bloody book?"
"It be nae your business."
Dun looked at him, and there was no friendliness in his eyes.
"Persecute wise women in your own town. Burn stakes in your own land. There has been none of it here, nor will there be."
"You didn't understand me," said the Witcher coldly. "Because I didn't try," growled Dun. "I noticed," Geralt said through his teeth, making no effort to be cordial.
"But be so gracious as to understand something, Honourable Dun. We have no agreement. I haven't committed myself to you in any way. You have no reason to believe that you've bought yourself a witcher who, for a silver penny or 3 halves, will do what you can't do yourselves, or don't want to do, or aren't allowed to."
"No, Honourable Dun, you have not bought yourself a witcher yet, and I don't think you'll succeed in doing so, not with your reluctance to understand." Dun remained silent, measuring Geralt with a gloomy stare. Netley cleared his throat and wriggled on the bench, shuffling his rag sandals on the dirt floor, then suddenly straightened up.
"Witcher, sir," he said. "Do nae be enraged. We will tell ye what and how. Dun?"
The elder of the village nodded and sat down.
"As we be riding here," began Netley, "ye did notice how everything here grows, the great harvests we have. There be nae many places ye see all grow like this, if there be any such. Seedlings and seeds be so important to us that 'tis with them we pay our levies, and we sell them and use them to barter. What's that got to do with the devil? The diavol was wont to make a nuisance of himself and play silly tricks, and then he'd be starting to steal a great deal of grain. At the beginning, we'd be bringing him a little to the stone and the hemp, thinking his fill he'd eat and leave us in peace. Naught of it. With a vengeance, he went on stealing, and when we started to hide our supplies in shops and sheds, well locked and bolted, 'tis furious he grew, sir. He roared, bleated, 'Uck, uck,' he called, and when he goes, 'Uck, uck,' ye'd do best to run for your life. He threatened to—"
"Screw,"
Dandelion threw in with a ribald smile.
"That too," agreed Netley. "Oh, and he mentioned a fire. Talk, long as we may, he couldn't steal, so 'tis levies he demanded. He ordered grain and other goods be brought him by the sackful. Riled we were then, and intended to beat his tailed arse. But—"
The freeman cleared his throat and lowered his head.
"Ye need nae beat about the bush," said Dun suddenly. "We judged the witcher wrong. Tell him everything, Netley."
"The old woman forbade us to beat the devil," said Netley quickly. "But we noticed Leela, because the woman only says what Leela tell her to, and we—"
"You know yourself, sir. We listen."
"I've noticed."
Geralt twisted his lips in a smile. "The woman can only waggle her chin and mumble a text which she doesn't understand herself. And you stare at the girl with gaping mouths as if she were the statue of a goddess. You avoid her eyes, but try to guess her wishes. And her wishes are your command.
Who is this Leela of yours?" "But ye have guessed that, sir. A prophetess, a wise one. But say naught of this to anyone. We ask ye, if word were to get to the steward, or, God's forbid, to the viceroy—"
"Don't worry," said Geralt seriously. "I know what that means, and I won't betray you."
The strange women and girls called prophetesses or wise ones who could be found in villages didn't enjoy the favour of those noblemen who collected levies and profited from farming. Farmers always consulted prophetesses on everything and believed them blindly and boundlessly. Decisions based on their advice were often completely contrary to the politics of lords and overlords. Geralt had heard of incomprehensible decrees, the slaughter of entire pedigree herds, the cessation of sowing or harvesting, and even the migration of entire villages. Local lords, therefore, opposed the superstition, often brutally, and freemen very quickly learnt to hide the wise ones. But they didn't stop listening to their advice, because experience proved the wise ones were always right in the long run.
"Leela did not permit us to kill the diavol," continued Netley. "She told us to do what the book says. As ye well know, it did nae work out. There has already been trouble with the steward. If we give less grain in levy than be normal, 'tis bawl he will, shout and fulminate. Thus we have nae even squeak to him of the diavol. The reason being the steward be ruthless and knows cruelly little about jokes. And then ye happened along. We asked Leela if we could hire ye.
And
she said, through the woman, that she need first of all to look at ye."
"And she did?"
"That she did. And accepted ye she has, that we know. We can tell what Leela accepts and what she doesn't."
"She never said a word to me."
"She ne'er a spoken word to anyone, save the old woman. But if she had not accepted ye, she would ne'er have entered the room for all in the world."
Geralt reflected.
"That's interesting. A prophetess who, instead of prophesying, doesn't say a word. How did she come to be among you?"
"We nae know, witcher, sir," muttered Dun. "But as for the old woman, so the older folk remember, it be like this.
The old woman afore her took a close-tongued girl under her wing too, one as which came from no one knows, and that girl she be our old woman. My grandfather would say the old woman be reborn that way, like the moon she be reborn in the sky, and ever anew she be. Do they laugh? I'm not laughing.
Geralt shook his head.
I've seen too much to laugh at things like that. Nor do I intend to put my nose into your affairs, Honourable Dun. My questions aim to establish the bond between Leela and the devil. You've probably realised yourselves that one exists. So, if you're anxious to be on good terms with your prophetess, then I can give you only one way to deal with the devil. You must get to like him.
Know ye, sir, said Netley, it be nay only a matter of the diovel. Leela does nay let us harm anything, any creature.
Of course, Dandelion butted in. Country prophetesses grow from the same tree as druids, and a druid will go so far as to wish the gadfly sucking his blood to enjoy its meal.
Ye hits it on the head.
Netley faintly smiled.
Ye hits the nail right on the head. 'Twas the same with us and the wild boars that dug up our vegetable beds. Look out the window. Beds as pretty as a picture. We have found a way. Leela doesn't even know. What the eyes do nay see, the heart will nay miss. Understand?
I understand, muttered Geralt. And how? But we can't move forward. Leela or no Leela, your devil is a sylvan, an exceptionally rare but intelligent creature. I won't kill him. My code doesn't allow it.
If he be intelligent, said Dun, go speak reason to him.
Just so, Netley joined in. If the diovel has brains, that will mean he steals grain according to reason. So ye, Witcher, find out what he wants. He doesn't eat that grain, after all. Not so much, at least. So what does he want grain for? To spite us? What does he want? Find out and chase him off in some Witcher way. Will you do that?
I'll try, decided Geralt.
But what?
Your book, my friends, is out of date. Do you see what I'm getting at?
Well, forsooth, grunted Dun.
Not really.
I'll explain, Honourable Dun, Honourable Netley. If you're counting on my help costing you a silver penny or three halves, then you are bloody well mistaken.
Part 5.
Aye!
A rustle, an angry,
ook, ook,
and the snapping of stakes reached them from the thicket.
Hey! Repeated the Witcher, prudently remaining hidden. Show yourself, Willower!
Willower yourself!
So what is it? Devil?
Devil yourself!
The Sylvan poked his head out from the hemp, baring his teeth.
What do you want?
To talk.
Are you making fun of me, or what? Do you think I don't know who you are? The peasants hired you to throw me out of here, eh?
That's right, admitted Geralt indifferently. And that's precisely what I wanted to chat to you about. What if we were to come to an understanding?
That's where it hurts, bleated the Sylvan. You'd like to get off lightly, wouldn't you? Without making an effort, eh? Fool the other one. Life, my good man, means competition. The best man wins. If you want to win with me, prove you're the best. Instead of coming to an understanding, we'll have competitions. The winner dictates the conditions. I propose a race from here to the old willow on the dyke.
I don't know where the dyke is, or the old willow.
I wouldn't suggest the race if you knew. I like competitions, but I don't like losing.
I've noticed. No, we won't race each other. It's very hot today.
Pity. So, maybe we'll pit ourselves against each other in a different way.
The Sylvan bared his yellow teeth and picked up a large stone from the ground.
Do you know the game, who shouts loudest? I shout first. Close your eyes.
I have a different proposition.
I'm all ears.
You leave here without any competitions, races or shouting, of your own accord, without being forced.
You can shove such a proposition a diable at ears.
The devil demonstrated his knowledge of the old language.
I won't leave here. I like it here.
But you've made too much of a nuisance of yourself here. Your pranks have gone too far.
Duval shies to you with my pranks.
The Sylvan, as it turned out, also knew the dwarf's tongue.
And your proposition is also as worth as much as Duval shies. I'm not going anywhere unless you beat me at some game. Shall I give you a chance? We'll play at riddles if you don't like physical games. I'll give you a riddle in a minute, and if you guess it, you win and I leave. If you don't, I stay and you leave. Rack your brains, because the riddle isn't easy.
Before Geralt could protest, the Sylvan bleated, stamped his hooves, whipped the ground with his tail, and recited,
"Little pink leaves, pods small and full. It grows in soft clay, not far from the stream. On a long stalk, its flower is moist. But to a cat, please show it not, 'cause if you do, he'll eat the lot." Well, what is it? Guess.
I haven't the faintest idea, the Witcher said, not even trying to think it over. Sweet pea, perhaps?
Wrong! You lose!
And what is the correct answer? What has, moist pods?
Cabbage!
Listen, growled Geralt. You're starting to get on my nerves.
I warned you, chuckled the Sylvan, that the riddle wasn't easy. Tough, I won, I stay, and you leave. I wish you, sir, a cold farewell.
Just a moment.
The Witcher surreptitiously slipped a hand into his pocket.
And my riddle? I have the right to a revenge match, haven't I?
No,
protested the devil.
I might not guess it after all. Do you take me for a fool?
No.
Geralt shook his head.
I take you for a spiteful, arrogant dope. We're going to play quite a new game shortly, one which you don't know.
Ha ha! After all, what game?
The game is called, said the Witcher slowly, "Don't do unto others what you would not have them do to you." You don't have to close your eyes.
Geralt stooped in a lightning throw. The one-inch iron ball whizzed sharply through the air and thwacked the Sylvan straight between the horns. The creature collapsed onto his back as if hit by a thunderbolt. Geralt dived between the poles and grabbed him by one shaggy leg. The Sylvan bleated and kicked. The Witcher sheltered his head with his arm, but to little effect. The Sylvan, despite his mean posture, kicked with the strength of an enraged mule. The Witcher tried and failed to catch a kicking hoof. The Sylvan flapped, thrashed his hands on the ground, and kicked him again in the forehead. The Witcher cursed, feeling the Sylvan's leg slip from his fingers. Both, having parted, rolled in opposite directions, kicked the poles with a crash, and tangled themselves up in the creeping hemp. The Sylvan was the first to jump up, and lowering his horned head, charged. But Geralt was already on his feet and effortlessly dodged the attack, grabbed the creature by a horn, tugged hard, threw him to the ground and crushed him with his knees. The Sylvan bleated and spat straight into the Witcher's eyes like a camel suffering from excess saliva. The Witcher instinctively stepped back without releasing the devil's horns. The Sylvan, trying to toss his head, kicked with both hooves at once and, strangely, hit the mark with both. Geralt swore nastily, but didn't release his grip. He pulled the Sylvan up, pinned him to the creaking poles, and kicked him in a shaggy knee with all his might. Then he leant over and spat right into his ear. The Sylvan howled and snapped his blunt teeth.
"Don't do unto others," panted the Witcher, "what you would not have them do to you. Shall we play on?"
The Sylvan gurgled, howled, and spat fiercely. But Geralt held him firmly by the horns and pressed his head down hard, making the spittle hit the Sylvan's own hooves, which tore at the ground, sending up clouds of dust and weeds. The next few minutes passed in an intense skirmish and exchange of insults and kicks. If Geralt was pleased about anything, it was only that nobody could see him, for it was a truly ridiculous sight. The force of the next kick tore the combatants apart and threw them in opposite directions into the hemp thicket. The Sylvan got up before the Witcher and rushed to escape, limping heavily. Geralt, panting and wiping his brow, rushed in pursuit. They forced their way through the hemp and ran into the hops. The Witcher heard the pounding of a galloping horse, the sound he'd been waiting for.
"Here, Dandelion, here!" he yelled. "In the hops!"
He saw the mount breast right in front of him and was knocked over. He bounced off the horse as though it were a rock and tumbled onto his back. The world darkened. He managed to roll to the side behind the hop poles to avoid the hooves.